This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. It's a sign of how downtown Chattanooga is open for business after more than a year of the pandemic. Riverfront Nights, the summer concert series, returns to Ross's Landing on Saturday, June 5th. Mickey McCamish is executive director of Friends of the Festival, which produces Riverfront Nights, and Riverbend, which will return in the fall. Mickey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me again to talk about another community event that we have coming up.
And this will be Riverfront Nights starting in June.
Yes, Ray. It starts on June the 5th. So we're starting a little earlier this year. Just, again, some of the remnants of scheduling as a result of COVID-19 changed our normally our routine would be that we would have Riverbend just about the time that we're doing Riverfront Nights. But we're having to make the adjustment, and we're looking at Riverfront Nights starting on June the 5th, and it's Saturday evenings. It's free. It's at Ross's Landing, same location as Riverbend. And so we'll do June the 5th. We'll do June the 12th, 19th, 26th. We'll take a little break around July the 4th, and then we'll come back on July the 24th, 31st, and then move into August on the 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th. So, Ray, we'll do a total of 10. This is the 13th year. So certainly when you've been around for 12 years and you're coming in here to the 13th, it's a sign of returning to normalcy, that we are beginning to return to normalcy. And to do it on the same day that we've always done Riverfront Nights on a Saturday, music runs from 7 to 10. We'll have beverages for people to purchase. There'll also be food trucks down there as well. So we just invite everyone to come down to beautiful Ross's Landing right there on the riverfront. And we see it as a pathway of reopening our city. And we want to be leading that pathway to bring people into businesses downtown, to return to normalcy, to go to the restaurants, enjoy a meal at the restaurant, then come over and enjoy free music at Riverfront Nights.
How might you be handling things differently, even with bringing the concerts back, just given the past year?
We will be following the guidelines of Hamilton County Health Department. That does include social distancing, masking. People will have an option. It's an outdoor event. We'll have sanitizing stations. We'll sanitize our restrooms as well. And we'll have masks for those if they would like to have a mask. We'll have those available to them. So it'll be slightly different than in the past, but we will follow the guidelines of Hamilton County Health Department. And then the concerts that we've done, even in late 2020, none of the COVID-19 investigative tracing came back to us. So we know how to do them, knew the events very safely. And I might add too, Ray, that Riverfront Nights is pet friendly. So you can bring your pet down and the pet can enjoy the music as well and have a good time with other pets.
And this will be taking place the same time that Nightfall is coming back, the same time that other music events, music venues are coming back.
That's correct. Nightfall occurs on Friday. We occur on Saturday. And it's live music. And it's doing it safely, making sure that we do it safely. And we bring it back, we follow the guidelines, and as long as we follow the guidelines, then we'll be able to do the live music and offer it free to people. So we just have to be very cautious, and we want everyone to go and get vaccinated, get the shots, and that just helps us to go out and enjoy these things and to do them very safely.
And then what about Riverbend?
Riverbend, we're looking at Riverbend right now. We're looking at some sort of fall concert. But Ray, it's going to be a different Riverbend. It will not be a Riverbend that will have the large numbers of people that we've had in the past. It will be a reduced size. And so we're right now in the planning of that, working very closely with the city, with the new mayor and his staff in organizing and making sure that we can safely do Riverbend and making sure everybody's very comfortable in making that happen.
And we should remind people that Riverbend was on its way to being retooled, and then the pandemic happened.
That's correct. It was. And, you know, Riverbend's been around 38 years. This would be 39 years. And so it's got a lot of branding that's associated with it. And in some way, Ray, that's a little bit of a challenge in that it's not a riverbend of the past of where you have hundreds of thousands of people that are there. It's going to be a different riverbend. It'll be a reduced footprint is what we're looking at. We're looking at 3 stages versus 4 stages, and we're looking in a confined area, and we'll limit the number of tickets. We know what the site numbers say, that the number of people can fit in that area, and we'll make sure that we allow plenty of space for social distancing. And by then, we hope that everyone will be vaccinated. Of course, we'll be into fall football season, so there'll be a lot of events that'll be at full capacity. So we are beginning to see signs. So I just encourage everyone to go out and get vaccinated for all of our sake.
And where can people go online to keep up on Riverfront Nights and Riverbend later in the year?
You can go to friendsofthefestival.com. We do have riverfrontnights.com, and that will go into Friends of the Festival. We'll link you to both of those websites, and we'll be updating them as we go along with the different sponsors that sign on to sponsor Riverfront Nights and Riverbend.
All right. Mickey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me.
Electric Avenue kicks off Riverfront Nights on Saturday, June 5th. On Saturday, June 12th, Lavender will open Riverfront Nights.
There is only one for me, and you have made that possibility. We can take this time to see if this is really going. All you gotta do is say yes. Don't deny what you feel. Let me address you, baby. Open up your mind, just rest. I'm about to let you know. You make me so, 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 so.
Three Star Revival opens Riverfront Nights on Saturday, June 19th.
Just reset. reset. I can't take it all. I can't take it all away. Can we just reset? Don't take it all. Don't take it all away. Don't you know?
Rick Rushing, here with the Blues Strangers, will open Riverfront Nights on Saturday, June 26th. For more details, go to riverfrontnights.com. You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots talking writing. My guest is drummer and storyteller Donnie Wynn. Before the pandemic shut everything down, Donnie Wynn was in our studio to share some of the many stories he had about working with singer Robert Palmer on a series of albums through the 1980s in the Compass Point Studios in the Bahamas.
When I walked in to the session that Robert had set up, this is the very first record I did with him, I was very nervous because I had done auditions in L.A. the whole year prior and had failed every one of them. So when I was going to the studio, I was very nervous because I was like, I've really enjoyed meeting this guy, but this will be the end of this one.
What would it take to imagination? It was too late to pretend it wasn't real. When walk love again, cooler than you've ever seen.
But then we chose this song, and again, I'll tell you how it all kind of unfolds, but it was a second line song, which is New Orleans Parade Rhythms, which, boom, Dr. John helped teach me that. So that was like, in my blood, and that was the very first song that I played with him, which is this In Walks Love Again.
Had he already recorded Sneakin' Sally Through the Alley at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was a New Orleans kind of thing, too, right?
New York and New Orleans. Half the record was The Meters, mm-hmm. with Lil' George guesting, and then the other half was Bernard Purdy and that crew out of New York that did the other side.
But he wanted that New Orleans.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was big on New Orleans everything. He loved the funk. Of course, he was really big on anything African and Caribbean. That's what he helped do, was bring that type music and integrate it into stuff long before Paul Simon or anybody else was doing it. So, and the fact he lived in the Bahamas, that's where he lived, and that's where we cut the first four
Compass
records.
Point.
Yep, exactly. So the New Orleans music, which is where African and Caribbean music all ended up anyway, and then they took it to a whole nother place, but he was very, very, very interested in anything to do with New Orleans music. Yeah.
Walking again, in what love again, walking again, in what love again, love again, chasing after you and me, love again, in what love again.
Robert Palmer in Walk Love Again with my guest Donnie Wynn playing drums. It sounds like the bass is keeping the rhythm and you're playing around the bass line.
Absolutely.
And so was the bass line there first before you started playing?
Well, it actually was Jack. Jack Waldman was our keyboardist, who ended up being one of my best buds of all time. But when Robert called the song out, he goes, let's start with In Walks Love Again. Of course, I had never heard any of it. I didn't know what he was talking about. But Jack started that organ part, which is straight out of the New Orleans Second Line Bible, And so I was like, oh, boom, and just went right into it. And then the bass player worked his way around me.
Well, because there's so much space in your playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, luckily I had grown up on second line music, so I understood it. You can tell if a drummer has just kind of learned it, because it just doesn't feel right, doesn't sound right. But if a drummer's grown up down there, they've eaten the food, they've sweated it, they know how to play it. And luckily, I did B. So it was in my blood. And so when Robert called that out, and that was the first song, I was greatly relieved because, again, I had been failing auditions in Los Angeles, so this was a good one to nail. So you want me to read a story?
Please do.
Well, living in Los Angeles, I had 2 weeks left on my deal. A deal brokered by my father and I, a handshake agreement, right there in his office in Alexandria, Louisiana. After telling him, I felt I needed to take my shot at this music gambit. I'd been playing drums since age 3. My first professional gig was at age 13. I had to take this shot. We agreed to cap a year on my ability to land a gig, and additionally, my dad would provide a $500 a month stipend from his business to help me get my footing. He stood, shook my hand, and said, "Go be the best you can be. It all doesn't work out. We'll be here waiting on you with open arms." I was on my own. Nashville didn't interest me. I didn't know anyone in New York City. I knew one person in L.A., so Los Angeles it was. And lucky for me, the one person I knew was the singer for this unknown band who were working on their first record, a band they'd named Toto. Jeff Beccaro, one of the greatest session drummers ever, the drummer for Toto, took a shine to me and was incredibly helpful on so many levels the entire year. He arranged auditions for me with Boss Gags, Rufus, and Larry Carlton. I didn't score any of those, although Larry was kind enough to tell me he saw what Jeff saw in me, but I just wasn't there yet. He said I needed a seasoned player, and the way I see it, you need more seasoning. Don't give up, though. You'll get there. I appreciated his honesty. I knew he was right. I had quite the rep in Louisiana, but Los Angeles was a much, much deeper pond. I was packing my things to go home when my phone rang. On the other end, I heard the unmistakable, dreamy Southern Louisiana drawl of a friend of mine, most dear, a bona fide madam from New Orleans, who I'd befriended while still in high school. She explained she was aware the agreement with my dad had run its course, so why not get on a jet plane and come to New Orleans for a weekend, get away before going back to work, have a blowout before reporting for duty, on her dime. I was knocked flat by the sweetness of the gesture, and to that end, she'd already bought a plane ticket, and I'd be staying at her French Quarter apartment on St. Philip, so who was I to say no? Only a fool. I made the flight. When landed, I exited the rear of the plane and was met on the tarmac by my China doll friend and a couple of her gals in a stretch limo. Just one example of how rules were meant to be bent or broken in the glorious freewheeling 70s. The gals slipped a security guard some cash or favors, I don't know. Either way, there they were by the rear of the plane waiting on me. Once in the car, the girls opened a bottle of champagne, and the icing on the cake, a ticket to see Robert Palmer that night with the meters opening. Hot damn. Have mercy. I'm in New Orleans. The makings of a great weekend were literally at hand. My friend, sweetheart that she was, always took great care of me whenever I was in town. This time, no exception. The concert was beyond satisfying. I'd seen the meters many times, and they always connected on a visceral level. I couldn't ever watch enough Zigaboo Modalist, a masterclass on brilliant syncopated drumming every time he sat behind a kit. This was only my second time to see Robert, though. I knew this much after that show. The cat could fare you well sing, and he knew how to work a band and craft a set. Top-notch talent. A snappy dresser to boot. I was impressed. Leo Nocentelli, the Meters guitarist, pulled me aside after the show and said, "Robert's coming over to the house. He's looking for tunes for his next album. I'm going to play him those of mine you played on. Come on over." No more coaxing was needed. I was there. I'd just gotten out of the cab when this beautiful older white Cadillac, replete with fins, pulled up into the front yard. The driver was a woman with porcelain skin and flaming red hair. She filled out her dress nicely, too. Her passenger was Robert. And as it turns out, we were the only white folks in attendance that night. Once we were ensconced in Leo's den, it didn't take long to get into the music. First track finishes, and Robert says, "Great track, Zig." Referring, of course, to Zigaboo. Zig said, "Ain't me." Second track plays, and Robert again says, "Great track, Zig." Zig says, "Ain't me." Third track finishes, and again, Robert says, "Another good track, Zig." Zig says, "Ain't me." Robert said, well, damn, who is it then? Leo and Zig pointed at me, and Zig said, it's Donnie Wanny. Robert looked at me, chuckled, and said, but you're white. Yes, was all my feeble mind could conjure in reply to his observation. That was the only exchange between Robert and yours truly for the rest of the evening. He and the gal stayed a little while longer, but when they split, the get-together pretty much ended. I flew back to Los Angeles, one happy guy. A weekend in New Orleans was exactly what the doctor ordered before reporting for duty. I say reporting for duty, but in truth, my situation could have been much worse, as in much. Basically, the plan my father laid out had me owning all the family's businesses by the time I was 28, instantly wealthy. But this music thing had been in my blood since I was 3. I started playing clubs, wearing fake mustaches when I was 13. And even more to the point, I quit playing in public for a year after I'd been fired from a session with some older musicians. Fired for having chops, but no pocket, the important part. I took that year to learn several records that featured drummers with serious pockets. Larry London, Bernard Purdy, Zigaboo Modalist, and Richie Hayward were my choices. I learned their performances lick for lick, too, to better understand what they did work so well. I came back from that woodshed a much different musician. The sessions with Leo, the first I'd done since taking the year off, only confirmed that tape doesn't lie and the year had paid off. Hearing those offhand comments from Robert made me feel better about my abilities, but there I was, staring down the fact my dream was all but over. I returned to Los Angeles and continued packing. 2 days before my year was up, the phone rang again. An Englishman on the other end identified himself as Dave Harper, Robert Palmer's manager. We exchanged pleasantries, then he got right down to it. Robert's started a new record here in Nassau, his home. He heard some work you did there in New Orleans, and he'd really like it if you'd come play drums on his new record. My world flashed before me, of all things. I greatly admired this cat. He only used the very finest of musicians, especially drummers. But here I was again. Larry said it. I needed seasoning. The risk of flying all that way only to be told I'm not good enough yet mortified me. So I said what I felt. Robert works with only the very finest. This I know. I've been in L.A. for a year only to be told I'm not there yet. So even though I'm flattered as hell by all this, especially hearing this before I go back to Louisiana, I gotta say no. Thank you kindly, but no. There was a pause. Then Dave said, tell you what, we know about you going back to Louisiana with your dad, but Robert heard something in you he liked. What are you doing this afternoon? Well, I'm packing. Well, we already bought you a ticket. The flight leaves this afternoon, gets here in time for dinner. And listen, if for some reason all this doesn't work out, don't worry about it. Stay a week on the beach on us. Then go back to Louisiana. But hey, who knows? Things might work out. How's that sound? Took me about a nanosecond. What time is that flight again? There are no words to adequately describe how I felt after that conversation ended. Of all the acts out there, he was the only one that had my attention. And by all accounts, looks like I had a decent shot. And in Nassau, of all places. I disembarked the small plane I'd boarded out of Miami. The tarmac was wet from recent rains. The air was warm, thick, the sweet smell of Caribbean waters and Bahamian soil. My muscles immediately limbered. A car was there for me, as promised. After a short drive along the beach, palm trees swaying in the moon's glow, I was dropped outside some charming seaside bungalows half hidden by a strand of bougainvillea. In a world not yet changed by globalization, I walked into a science fiction movie. At a volume most impressive, real African music was thumping. I mean the real thing. There were people from different parts of the world speaking in their native dialects. Proper Indian food was on the grill. A glass of champagne was thrust into my hand as I walked past the kitchen, and there he sat. A gregarious hello greeted me, and strange, but I felt an immediate kindred spirit, as if I'd known his soul for several lifetimes. Over dinner conversation, it flowed like champagne. The music selections were a wild hodgepodge from all over the world. All incredible stuff, and I'd not yet heard any of it. I was a sponge. The food was knockout. Sue, Robert's wife, was terribly sweet. I'd fallen into my version of heaven. The family I always knew was out there for me. Robert said, "Studio's right across the street. Let's go make some music." That awful dread returned. This had been such a terrific party, a real homecoming. Now all must end as I've got to step into several pairs of large shoes, and I don't see how I can make them fit. There was already a kit there at Compass Point Studio, the smell of new construction still on the place. Some sand from Love Beach poured from the front of the bass drum courtesy of Mr. Carl Peterson, the Jamaican engineer who said it best. The bass drum must have connection with Mother Earth, man. I'd brought a 5x14 Camco snare and a couple of Zildjian cymbals to add to what was already there. I tuned the kit. Then Robert called out, "Let's look at In Walks Love again." Jack Waldman, one of the keyboardists, started a bubbling B3 pattern straight out of the New Orleans Second Line Bible. And I knew Second Line like the back of my hand. Second Line is in my blood and is what enabled me to score my first gig in the big show with Dr. John while in high school. I dove in the deep end and swam. This is where I belonged and where I would remain for 25 years. I had arrived.
Indeed. Donnie Wynn is our guest, and if you doubt it, let's play another track to illustrate what you're talking about. What should we play next?
Well, the one that kind of, it's a couple of records past this point, but it was a very unusual record, and it became a big worldwide smash for us, but it's a funny story, and I just had to tell it. And so, yeah, You're In My System would be a good one to look at off the Pride record. It was a bright, sunshiny Saturday morning in Nassau, Bahamas. Bougainvillea were blooming. Pink petals wisped across the roads. Birds were singing, while potcake dogs barked in the distance. Robert had decided to take the weekend off from the Moon Martin record he was producing. All was proceeding smoothly on that front, and we were actually ahead of schedule. Now, here it was Saturday morning, and no cartoons were on the television. Even though bona fide movie freaks, there wasn't any movies in his collection we cared to watch. Werner Herzog's Fitzcarraldo was already on tap for later that evening. We became fidgety, antsy. We were bored. The need to disperse some creative juju was crawling up our collective spine and begged for release. Robert said, "Do you remember that song, You're In My System, that was playing at that dance joint in Paris, that after-hours place, The Empire?" "Yeah," I said. "Funky thing with that drive and bass sequence. The one that Roman Polanski and his Chickadee seemed to like." "The one, yeah," he said. "I really want to sing that tune, and the studio is wide open today. And as it so happens, David Frank, the keyboardist of that group, The System, who wrote it, is on the island. He's staying right down the road. I'm thinking of giving him a call and see if by chance he's up for it. Sound good?" Without hesitation, I remarked, "I think that's a hell of an idea whose time has certainly come." A few minutes later, a beaming Robert returned and said, "Time to put the torque on some Saturday afternoon funk." While David and Jack Neuber, the engineer, were setting up his synths, Robert and I began talking drum approach. Both of us were well into the Family record, a side project that Prince produced. There was an instrumental on it entitled Yes that Jellybean Johnson, the Southpaw drummer, Fare You Well tore up. It was the most impassioned funk drumming I'd heard to date. Very musical. I was impressed by his precision that he melded with an open-armed looseness, an abandon of sorts. The excitement, the enthusiasm he brought to that track lifted it, made it transcend. To make the groove sizzle even more, he incorporated complex hi-hat patterns that really screwed the groove down hard. I told Robert, "I'd like to cut this track one drum at a time, but with the Jelly Bean approach. That way we can zone in on each piece of the kit to make them sonically stand apart, make the kit super monster killer without the typical bleed from everything else." He was up for the idea, and we started setting up pieces of the acoustic kit in the long, tall hallway that led to Studio B, along with the Simmons electronic kit, which we put into the control room. David revved the original bass sequence. He had the track bubbling and popping, but quick. He then sweetened it up with some choice overdubs, string layers, swells, doubled lines, all the good stuff. By the time it was my turn, I was chomping at the bit, ready to be all up in this mofo. I chose a hammered copper snare to use in the hall, brought out the Simmons bass drum too. Those gave us the sound we were looking for, a rock'em sock'em, meaty kind of a smack. I I played the hi-hat next and was able to put a real zizz and spark into it whenever the song needed a little bit of Skip to Malou, My Darling. Jelly Bean was in my head. Got the Simmons toms tuned, and I used them as the fill into and out of the choruses. We sped up the tape and recorded various cymbals, chinas, etc. Made them more like breaths rather than smashes. All in all, a fun afternoon. Robert's turn, and he went to his spot. Jack got a real good sound on him, and Robert went after his performance with a vengeance. He owned it. When done, there was a stunned silence. I was rendered speechless by his impassioned vocal. I finally broke the silence. "Yeah," was all I managed to say. "Yeah," he said. "Yeah. Yeah, it felt good. Jesus," I said. "I think he nailed it. Damn, come on in here. Bring your buns, son." "Okay," he said, and he did. And that was that. The mix was done several months later in a cozy studio in Pigalle in Paris by Wunderkind Dominique Franck-Bouchard. The part of our job that satisfies was a few months later, the song was on the radio all over the world, in the dance clubs all over the world. Knowing the airways were open to us, assured Island Records would do their job, gave everything we did a sense of purpose. Plus, your name is forever attached to the recording, so you better make a statement that would stand the test of time. Remaining true to your raison d'être, ensuring the performance's longevity was a concept I readily got behind. Anytime the red light came on, the curtain was raised, we reached for greatness. And as Robert taught me, that is the only way to fly. Long after we departed Mother Earth, You're In My System will still get played, making butts move from coast to coast. A trade-off I can live with. Not bad for a board on a Saturday day off. Fitzcarraldo blew us away.
On Scenic Roots Talking Writing, our guest is Donny Wynn, talking about working with singer Robert Palmer and a group of gifted musicians in the Bahamas in the 1980s.
A few weeks later, well into the AM, my phone rang. I picked up the handset and heard the international phone static, as well as Robert's laughter weaving through some deafening noise. I raised my voice. "Hello! Hello, Babaloo!" Robert wandered in from the oral onslaught. "Hey, can you catch a flight out tomorrow?" "To where?" "Nassau." "Sure. I thought y'all were tracking this week, though." "Yeah, we got some good stuff in the can, yeah. That's one of them on playback. But there's more, and I want you to finish the record." Some wicked sounds were electrifying our international phone connection. A powerful, nimble beast was on the prowl, aided by a blitzkrieg bombast I'd never heard on any record of his before. Something special was brewing. I could hear it. I could feel it.
Discipline of love. Discipline of love, yeah.
Jeff and Guy finally joined me and we cranked it. Whoa, This one was one blistering hot rod of a band capable of anything. These guys have gears between gears. When the red light came on, we took no prisoners. We had Discipline of Love nailed in only a couple of takes. In the control room, the smiles were unanimous. We listened back. The track was brutal, murderous. The drums were Mighty Joe Young. Jason had raised the bar considerably. And so much texture from these cats, so much dimension and space. They understand tonal frequencies through rhythm more keenly than any other musicians I've ever worked with. These were some bad, bad boys. The song faded, and we were a pleased Bobby bunch. Bernard said, "That's the take." I was standing behind Bernard, a big man, and he swiveled and flashed his pearlies, a smile I'd grow to dearly love by the end of this record, and he said, "By the way, yeah, you can unpack your things now," laughing as he did, his eyes dancing. So I did. I'd passed the test, and I didn't look back. From that moment on, I began breathing a rarefied air, the special air only found at higher altitudes. I was accepted. Destino for both Robert and myself. We were capturing lightning in a bottle, and our lives wouldn't ever be the same.
Thank you so much, Donnie. Donnie Wynn, our guest. Drummer.
Yay.
Storyteller.
All the
photographer.
Above. All the above. Got to do things. I only got so much time. I got to do something with all the time.
What are your plans for these stories?
You know, I'm really looking for a publisher. You know, I've got a bunch. I've got over 50 of these things. And there was a lot of other people like Tom Waits and King Vidor. I mean, all sorts of people I met through my association with him, and they were all very odd, unusual circumstances and meetings. And I've always remembered these things for whatever reason, but anyway, I'm writing them all down now, and I've got about 20 done. I got about 50 more to do, but yeah, I'm looking for a publisher.
Well, this is rich material. I don't think it'll have trouble with them.
I should hope not, but because also, you know, I have a foot in the analog world, a foot in the digital world through our recording processes. So there'll be a lot of this that people who've never recorded like that will find interesting because it's a world that they'll never be able to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate to be in that position, and I'm glad he liked me.
Well, please come back and share some more stories with us.
It is always my pleasure to come spend some time with you, dear sir.
It is a fun.
And yeah, count me in.
A lot of fun for me too, Donnie.
Count me in on that. Count me in.
I will. This is Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.